We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act.
The U.S. Defense Secretary not in favor of using the military against protesters. It's Friday, June 5th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the United Nations calls out the Philippines' war on drugs, Australia's economic decline, COVID trash a dirty issue, helping the young, mingling with wildlife. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As largely peaceful protests continue in major cities around the United States, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said that he does not support the use of active duty military forces in quelling unrest. The Pentagon's chief statement puts him at odds with President Donald Trump, who has threatened to send troops to crack down on over a week of massive protests sparked by the death of a black man in the custody of a white police officer. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara has the story.
Largely peaceful protests continued in major U.S. cities Wednesday, where tens of thousands defied curfews and the threat of the coronavirus to express outrage over racism and police violence. Earlier this week, U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to invoke a law which would allow him to authorize active duty forces to quell protests without governor's consent. Challenging the president's threat, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said active duty forces should only be used in the most urgent and dire of situations.
We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act.
Wednesday morning, Esper ordered 200 active duty soldiers to return to their home base after 2 days of peaceful demonstrations in Washington, but abruptly overturned the decision just hours later after a meeting at the White House. Esper also distanced himself from a malign visit by Trump to a church near the White House to take a picture with a Bible. After police dispersed the crowd with flash grenades and chemical sprays, the move and his overall handling of protests have hurt Trump's approval rating.
We're in the middle of social unrest as intense as we've seen since the 1960s. This is not a good atmosphere and environment for a president to run for re-election. So he's going to have to do a lot of things to get back on track and perhaps to become the front runner again, because as of today, he is not the front runner.
The unrest was triggered by the death of George Floyd, a black man who died after a white police officer pinned his knee on Floyd's neck for more than 8 minutes. All living American former presidents, including Jimmy Carter, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, have voiced condemnation. In a virtual town hall, former President Barack Obama urged mayors to review the use of force in their cities.
That was a far more representative cross-section of America out on the streets, peacefully protesting, and who felt moved to do something because of the injustices that they had seen.
The protests have highlighted multiple systems of racial inequity in the country.
And that's connected to housing, it's connected to employment, it's connected to public schools. We often talk about public school to prison pipeline. So it's not just about sentencing or bad policing or police cameras. There's so many people out in the streets because something is fundamentally wrong and broken in the system for millions of Americans.
The charges for Minnesota police officer Derek Chauvin have been elevated to second-degree murder, defined as intentional murder that lacks premeditation. Three officers who were on the scene have been charged with aiding and abetting the murder. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Hong Kong legislature passes controversial national anthem law. India hopes to resolve China face-off along border with talks. North Korea warns the South to stop defectors from scattering anti-North leaflets. U.S. to bar Air China planes from entering the country. COVID-19 drags Australia into recession. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website.
Thank you.
VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A new United Nations report accuses the Philippines government of waging an illegal campaign against suspected drug users in which thousands are being killed and arbitrarily arrested with impunity. The report, released by the UN Human Rights Office on Thursday, calls for justice for victims and for perpetrators to be held accountable for their crimes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This hard-hitting report sets out in stark terms the devastating toll the government's war on drugs has taken on the Philippine people. It says the government's focus on countering security threats and illegal drugs has resulted in widespread and systematic killings of thousands of alleged drug suspects and human rights defenders over the past 5 years. According to official government figures, more than 8,600 people have been killed. But the UN Human Rights Office estimates the real number to be at least three times higher. Yet during this time, it notes only one policeman has been convicted of killing a drug suspect. The main author of the report, Ravina Shamdasani, says key policy documents relating to the campaign against illegal drugs lack legal protections. She says they also contain troubling language, such as negation and neutralization of drug suspects.
And while these terms are not specifically defined, when you couple the use of such ominous language with the kind of high-level rhetoric calling for the killings of suspected of drug offenders, we find that this may amount to a permission to kill. This may be interpreted by police as a permission to kill.
The report finds police routinely make house arrests without warrants. It says there's evidence of police cover-up of killings of unarmed victims. It says most of the victims of the illegal drug campaign appear to be men from urban communities living in poverty. But Shamdasani tells VOA that data about how many people have been killed and who they are is very limited.
What their socioeconomic backgrounds were, you know, the gender, the where they lived, and even whether they were users of drugs or involved in the drug trade, for example. Now, our position is clear. People who use drugs or sell drugs do not lose their human rights. In fact, the UN advocates for the decriminalization of the possession of drugs.
The Human Rights Office says it shared the first draft of the report with the government last week. It says the government provided a number of substantive comments, many of which have been incorporated in the report. However, it adds there's been no official response since the report was released. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong's legislature has passed a controversial law to forbid ridicule of the Chinese national anthem amid widespread opposition. The move came on the 31st anniversary of the crackdown on the Tiananmen pro-democracy movement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday as we continue with VOA Asia. The coronavirus shutdown and the summer bushfires have ended Australia's run of 29 years of uninterrupted economic growth. Gross domestic product or national income for the March quarter fell, dragging Australia into recession for the first time since the early 1990s. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
George H.W. Bush was the US president when Australia last went into recession in 1991. That proud record of almost 30 years of uninterrupted growth has come to a shuddering halt. In a recession, an economy shrinks or goes into reverse. Latest figures show the Australian economy was in trouble before the COVID-19 outbreak, after a devastating bushfire season, a slowdown in tourism and weak domestic demand. The pandemic has only added to the decline. Lockdown restrictions to stem the spread of the coronavirus saw thousands of businesses forced to close, from gyms to cafes and theatres to many shops. Unemployment is expected to double to 10%, and massive financial stimulus packages have sent national debt soaring. The government is warning that the outlook for the months ahead is dire. However, Australia appears in better shape than other G7 and other Asian countries, which have had much bigger falls in national income. Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg.
What we were facing was an economist's version of Armageddon. We have avoided the economic fate and the health fate of other nations because of the measures that we have taken as a nation. Now, the June quarter, the economic impact will be severe.
The Governor of the Reserve Bank, Philip Lowe, said Australia was facing the toughest conditions since the Great Depression. But he too said it was possible that the depth of the downturn will be less than earlier expected. These are anxious times for many Australians. As unemployment increases, many of those in work are feeling greater job insecurity and face higher levels of household debt. All this against a backdrop of fears of a potential second COVID-19 outbreak. Australia's recorded just over 7,200 confirmed coronavirus cases. The majority of patients have recovered, but 102 people have died. Various lockdown restrictions, including the reopening of schools, bars, cafes and beauty salons, are gradually being eased across the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. A standoff between Indian and Chinese troops along their disputed border in the northern Himalayas shows no sign of easing. But even as the Asian giants have moved in troops, talks are being held at the military and diplomatic levels. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. As hospitals in New York treat a flood of patients with COVID-19, and as people wear masks and gloves to grocery stores and banks, discarded personal protection equipment dumped in the city's streets is becoming a health and environmental hazard. Nina Vishneva looked at how New York City is dealing with the problem. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Ryan McKenzie owns a small coffee shop in New York City. And while his cafe works at half of its capacity, you can't say the same about McKenzie. He spends every spare minute cleaning up coronavirus-related trash from the city streets.
It's a disgusting habit that humans have, and unfortunately, they feel like they can just throw things on the ground, and it just bothered me.
Days after the strict lockdown measures were imposed in New York, residents were happy to see a clear, clean sky over the Big Apple. Until they looked down at sidewalks, store entrances, empty subways, and even flower beds. Used face masks and gloves dotted the ground.
We've been working really hard, frankly, to do a lot of public education and social media work to remind people we want you to be safe during the pandemic, but we want you to do it and still be conscious enough to protect the environment and protect the earth. So wear your PPE. Just throw it out in the garbage.
The concern by environmentalists is shared by city authorities, who are urging people to dispose of face masks and gloves properly. Yet the look of Manhattan streets shows that not everyone is following these recommendations, which is especially detrimental because municipal street cleaning has slowed down considerably during the quarantine.
They're supposed to throw it in the trash. I do.
You do?
I do all the time. All the time. I'm a super, so that's what I do.
Clean up after yourself. I should put my mask on as I'm saying that. Clean up after yourself, definitely. I have noticed a lot of masks and gloves everywhere.
Spreading the coronavirus is another concern. No one knows who wore the discarded masks and gloves.
Theoretically, that is possible if you were to pick one up and it, you know, to be contaminated with SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that causes COVID-19, and then you were to touch your mouth or your face or your eyes, and that could be a transmission mechanism.
There's another problem. The plastic contained in gloves ends up on the city beaches, and what doesn't end up in the ocean killing birds and turtles will break into microplastics, further polluting the environment.
The gloves, they get washed out to the ocean after it rains.
And while Mackenzie cannot speed up the city's cure from the coronavirus, he is at least trying to keep the city clean while everyone waits for some return to normalcy. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, Riley's Way Foundation is helping to make the goals of young people come true in honor of a 9-year-old who died far too young. Maxim Moskalkov has more on the group and the young people making it all happen.
Sonika Menon is a high schooler from Chicago, Illinois, who was just 14 years old when she founded a charity initiative called the Birthday Giving Program in 2017. The program helps both children and adults who can't afford to throw a birthday party.
My parents always brought so much joy. They gave me so many gifts, baked cake for me, decorated our house, and that just always made me so happy. And I wanted to share the joy that I experienced. I think our mission is to really just ensure that everyone's being celebrated regardless of their differences, regardless of the challenges that they face.
Sonika's initiative works with more than 30 homeless shelters and other organizations that help the needy and poor. In the 3 years it has existed, the Birthday Giving Program has raised more than $17,000 in donations and given out more than 2,000 gifts, birthday balloons, and cakes.
I felt that it was so important to bring senior citizens and veterans into the organization as well, and to provide birthday celebrations to them. We also brought in music to the program as well. So my sister Anya and I play the piano. So we play the piano for some of the residents at the nursing homes and the memory care facilities that we work with.
Sonika's mission is in part funded by the Riley's Way Charity Foundation. Riley's Way was founded in 2014 by businessman Ian Sandler and his wife to honor their daughter Riley, who passed away when she was 9.
One of our national programs called the Call for Kindness. So that is now in its second year. And we provide $3,000 grants to high school students across the U.S., who apply either for new or existing projects.
Riley's Way has provided $450,000 in grants in 6 years that have been used towards projects like those of Sonika Menon. Another example is a project started by 17-year-old Matthew Yekel from Houston, Texas, who helps homeless LGBTQ youth.
I created a home-cooked meal program. I coordinated drives at 19 different schools across Houston, and I also worked with a clothing designer to renovate existing clothing donations. And I really wanted this project to show the humanity behind people experiencing homelessness. I didn't just want to provide meals. I wanted everyone at Tony's Place to know that someone was willing to spend hours in the kitchen cooking for them.
The coronavirus pandemic has not stopped Riley's Way. Rather, it added a new program to their agenda, one that focuses on helping those who lost the most during the crisis.
We reached out to our community, and we heard back from our teens, and they said they really want an opportunity to put actions and programs into work today. And so we immediately released funding and reached out to our community.
And projects got off the ground quickly. One high schooler started a program to help kids in hospitals during the pandemic. Another has teenagers reading books online to preschoolers. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
As VOA Asia continues, in recent days, workers at a medical center in New Orleans have been greeted with expressions of gratitude from an unnamed artist, sketched out in chalk on the sidewalk. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on the uplifting effects it's having on the hospital staff.
It's a simple gesture that brought smiles to the faces of many hospital employees.
So as you're walking in, it says, if you're just arriving, thank you for what you're about to do. And then as you walk a little bit further, it says, you are extraordinary.
First-year resident Leslie Miller, who works in the hospital's pediatrics unit, stops to read the colorful messages left by the mystery rider.
And then as you leave and you're walking out to go home, it says, if you are leaving, thank you, rest well. So it was very sweet of whoever did that. It definitely meant a lot to me, and it was a surprise, a colorful surprise, walking out and going home to go to bed after a long shift.
The messages are heartwarming to see, says lab technician Minerva Martin.
Oh, it's nice. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Give us hope.
New Orleans is in the state of Louisiana, where so far about 20,595 coronavirus cases have been confirmed. The Ochsner Medical Center is one of the largest hospitals in the area and has recently converted regular rooms into intensive care-like units to accommodate the sudden surge in COVID-19 patients. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Even though human interactions are very limited because of the coronavirus pandemic, business is brisk at a Virginia animal park that's found a way to safely keep its doors open. As VOA Saqibul Islam reports, visitors are lining up for close-up and personal interactions with animals while still adhering to social distancing guidelines.
There is a commotion in the zoo as the animals finally see some visitors after months.
We didn't have anything going on here, so it was completely shut down, nobody here at all.
The zoo at Roar's Zoo Foray is still closed due to COVID-19. And animals are not getting the usual amount of public attention. But the scene is totally different over the safari side of the complex. Cars are being allowed in for the first time since the coronavirus lockdown. Before the pandemic, only bus tours operated by the animal park were allowed.
With the restrictions surrounding the current situation with the pandemic, we weren't able to keep the walkthrough open. We came up with a creative way to get the drive-through safari open to respect all of those certain restrictions.
The self-drive safari tour is attracting visitors from other states as well. The experience is totally human interaction free if you get the ticket online and drive through the park at your own pace in the comfort of your own car.
It's a really fun drive through. Kids had fun, everybody was laughing. It was a great experience.
I think it's good for kids because they get to see animals that they've probably never seen before.
Visitors can encounter with 9 different animal species, from bisons and llamas to fallow deer native to Eurasia.
Whoa!
Toddlers Zach and Max are very excited to interact with animals after 2 months of staying at home.
And I think that this is a great idea to continue, give them opportunities to still have fun while being safe.
According to the curator of the Zufari, since they have opened, nearly 200 cars have been visiting every day.
I was petting him.
Not only are the kids excited, so are the animals.
Especially our llamas and donkeys, they've been eating from cars every single day. So I think all the animals are very excited, and they're pretty used to having people around. So it's been really quiet out here, so they're happy to have people around feeding them.
Routinely washing our hands.
Chief Operating Officer Mike Kerr says while business here is good, revenue is still down because the other half of the zoo remains closed. They hope to reopen that section under proper CDC safety guidelines whenever that is allowed, under Virginia's phased-in relaxation of the lockdown. Saqibul Islam, VOA News, Vienna, Virginia.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. We're also on Instagram and YouTube. Come visit us. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Popeyboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day. Be safe. Be well.